First, in the United States as a whole, a quarter of children under five are living in poverty. In Milwaukee, the numbers are worse. More than 40% of children under 18 fall below the poverty line. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have named the conditions of poverty as a risk factor for trauma, which means that poverty in early life can have a lifelong impact. Bevin Baker is a commissioner of health for the city of Milwaukee. He recently took part in a panel discussion at Marquette University that focused on the connection between poverty and childhood trauma. Commissioner Baker, welcome back to Central Time.
So happy to be here with you.
Now, how does poverty act as a form of trauma?
Well, it underlies a significant event in one's life, and it can be a driver. It can be a barrier to people and families thriving in our community. It really undermines and determines some key things in our lives, whether we have food security, whether we have housing quality, whether we have good access to schools or jobs. So poverty is a major driver for the well-being of all who live in this great state of Wisconsin.
And how does it affect, let's start with kids before we look at the long-term impact of growing up in poverty. Can you talk about how poverty affects directly the lives of children?
Well, first and foremost, children need to feel safe, and and they sort of absorb everything like a sponge. You know, they're bright and they're curious, but they can feel stress, and that chronic stress that adults have, you know, it sort of impacts children, and doesn't give them a chance to really thrive in their lives, and it can really create anxiousness. It can create a feeling of stress that one can't turn off. It's a light that never goes off. And childhood trauma can really hurt foundational issues and growth for children. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think this is a major concern for us. Children living in these environments of chronic unmitigated stress are more likely to have some downstream traumatic events in life. They're more likely to need special help at schools. They're more likely to be engaged in activities that might lead to either low functioning or even violence, for that matter.
And this can turn up in life expectancy. You were at a conference lately where people talked about the differences in something as simple as lifespan for people growing up in a lower income and growing up in poverty or a higher income neighborhood. Can you talk about the difference that can make?
Well, it's a huge difference, and we've been able to look at two zip codes here in our city of Milwaukee, and the difference of growing up in one of these two zip codes where chronic poverty is in one and there's a wealthier community in the other is 12 years. It's about 4,380 days difference of life expectancy. So, and I think that's just wrong. No one should have their life expectancy determined just by their zip code. But because of poverty indicators in this one zip code, you can expect to live 12 years less.
And we're talking two zip codes just basically down the road from each other, right?
Down the road from each other. Geographically, one would be able to get in their car and drive there in a matter of minutes, but it's a world of difference and a world of life expectancy, 12 years, nearly 4,400 days.
Let's talk about some of the other outcomes of poverty when it comes to things like educational success and incarceration rates.
Well, there's great data out there to suggest that, you know, the low educational attainment and poverty as a barrier can lead to less economic security throughout the lifespan of an individual, and that's just tough. There's, you know, imagine always having to climb uphill, and when you get uphill, you have to go back down again. You don't get to stay at a level where you can have economic security. And in terms of a life where crime and or violence or the prison system intersects, their poverty indicators and the things that we look at, those barriers actually somehow terminate into incarceration. And Wisconsin leads in that regard when we stratify for some of the poverty indicators, and we need to do better in that regard.
This is kind of a different way of thinking, because we might think poverty is over here. It's an economic problem. Health and medicine over here, that's a medical problem. We don't always think of the overlap. Are we starting to change the way we think?
We're changing the way we think, and I think we're utilizing good population health and public health metrics. Now, we have something called our Milwaukee Elevate. It's our 5-year community health improvement plan. And what we're doing there is saying we want to address these issues that are not typical. We want to address economic security. We want to address fairness and inclusivity in our society, and we really want to look at mental health. These are the things that our community is saying that we need to look at, but it's also what researchers are saying that we need to look at to make certain that we have the goal of becoming a trauma-informed city and hopefully a trauma-informed state so everyone has an equal opportunity to thrive and poverty would not be a major barrier.
We're talking to Bevin Baker, Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee, about the links between poverty, trauma, and health. And Bevin, let's follow up on what you were just talking about there. Trauma-informed care is a phrase I've heard a lot. What does it mean to be thinking in a trauma-informed way about citizens' health?
Well, this means that government and community-based agencies are trained better to understand the impact of trauma has on their particular community. It means that we're better able to serve individuals who have experienced trauma. It means that you know what's out there in the community and you're going to do a better job. Just imagine if you went to your mechanic and he had no clue about the type of car that you were driving and no clue about how that car functions. We want to be informed so when someone comes in for care that we can impact their outcomes. And that's what being a trauma-informed city and a state means, that we understand, we cover the waterfront, and we're experienced in being able to meet the needs of anyone who would come through our doors.
On a practical level, who's the we here? Who needs training? Who needs to maybe change the mindset in interacting with the public?
Well, a long time ago, I used to think it was just your family practice doc, but I think it's now anyone who interacts with anyone in the public health systems. If you go to get your eyes checked, or if you go to get just a wellness check, or if you go to do anything where you're impacting your life by a caregiver, they need to be trauma-informed. They need to get trained so they can understand the symptoms, the signals, and any type of indicator that suggests that trauma and stress have impacted your life. So the we is everyone. The we could be your daycare. It could be just looking at how your child is responding. The daycare worker could say, you know, we know Johnny or Jane has been a little, you know, not themselves these last couple of weeks. Is there anything going on? Just making certain that everyone has their antenna up. So the we is all of us, and all of us can know that there are individuals who have a bad day, but everyone should be prepared to do something about it, to intervene, and to make certain that we can help people where they are.
Is the criminal justice system part of that story, from police to courtrooms and beyond?
I think that they are. I think that they have to make certain that safe and a reliable community is a part of it. I think that there's a lot of work to be done in that area, and I think that our law enforcement and our criminal justice system are moving in that direction. But sometimes it's hard to change overnight. This is not going to happen immediately, but it won't happen unless we get out the gate and start doing this. I think the key thing to remember here is that most needed answers and solutions are economic. We know that poverty is a driver, and if we can get jobs, if we can get economic development, then I think the criminal justice system becomes a long-term issue, but not an immediate-term solution. And I think that this is what we got to do to make certain that economic indicators are put on the table so that poverty won't drive us to incarceration.
It seems like the biggest problem here is a vicious cycle. If a generation is growing up in poverty and we're finding that means their education is going to suffer for that, they're going to be more likely to be incarcerated, less likely to get jobs, then that means we're raising a new generation to live in poverty and so on down the road. How do you break that?
Well, I think we break that by going far upstream from where we currently are. And I think that we know that there are drivers for poverty. There are social and economic determinants that impact our whole lives, whether that be the housing, the transportation, or the education. But we have to go upstream. And that's where we're talking about impacting families, impacting children very early in life, looking at things like, you know, adverse childhood experiences, so that before individuals get to adulthood, that we've already addressed those key concerns. So we have to go far upstream. You don't wait until the disease shows up to begin to think about prevention.
Now, I've heard trauma-informed care as a phrase more and more. I've heard it from Democrats and Republicans, people at the state and local levels. I know the First Lady of Wisconsin, Tonette Walker, has been talking about it. How do you make sure that something's actually done with that and it's not just a buzzword that we forget about in a year or two?
Well, I think that, and I appreciate the work of First Lady Walker. I think she's done a great job of raising awareness. I think what you're beginning to see at the federal level is that the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare and the payer systems are going to say, you need to make certain that this is a part of your delivery of services. I think you have to, a government needs to make certain that we don't pay providers who aren't looking at trauma-informed care as a key component of their health service delivery. So we need to have reimbursement follow action, and I think that's what we're going to see. So policy change is coming, but it's great to have awareness at the level of the First Lady, to have legislators talking about it, but I think we have to have payment schemes match our actions, and that is on the way, and I think you're going to see more of that with behavioral health being reimbursed along the way for those who understand and have been trained in trauma-informed care.
We'll leave it there for now. Commissioner Baker, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. So happy to have you, and thank you for getting the word out to Wisconsin residents.
Bevin Baker is Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee. He joined us to talk about high poverty rates in some of Milwaukee's neighborhoods and how they can lead to trauma symptoms in children and adults.